From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with sports editor of the Arizona Daily Star, Ryan Finley. We are a part of the Wildcaster team, and usually before every home game for during the basketball and football season, we do a live podcast, usually on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. But now that basketball and football season is over with, and while baseball and softball season is in full swing, we will do a monthly live podcast here at Frog and Firkin. They've been so nice to allow us to do a live podcast here, right here on University. It is mid-afternoon, Ryan.
I know. I've missed their food. The reason, let's be honest, the reason why we're doing this is we miss their food.
For sure.
And so now we get to pop back in.
Great
environment. It's fantastic. And happy to be talking sports with you, Justin. So much has gone on.
Yes.
And so much is going on this week in sports. Where do you want to start?
So I think we should start off with what is on everybody's mind involving the Arizona basketball program, and that is the federal trial. But we'll also talk about some Arizona spring football, what we took away out of the spring practice period, and just overall thoughts heading into the summer. And then we'll also talk about Luke Walton's new gig.
Justin Spears, the Lakers fan, wants to talk about Luke Walton.
I'm happy for Luke.
Stoked. We'll get into that later. Yes.
But, Ryan, let's start off with Arizona basketball and the federal trial, which begins here shortly. It's
Monday.
The final countdown, Monday.
Monday, but really, for the sake of Arizona fans, the date to watch here is Friday. Friday, a federal judge in New York City will rule as to whether or not two of the subpoenaed basketball coaches, reported to be Sean Miller and Will Wade of LSU, will have to testify in this trial, which begins Monday in New York City. Basically, there have been competing filings here in the last week and a half, between attorneys on both sides in this case. The government basically is arguing that these coaches should not be allowed to testify because it's basically a circus for circus's sake. They said in their filings that the defense attorney has promised to pull the curtain back on college basketball, and that this trial is not about pulling the curtain back on college basketball. It's about prosecuting Christian Dawkins basically for fraud. Okay. The defense's counterpoint here is these coaches will give some insight into Christian Dawkins's frame of mind during the alleged incidents that happened, the bribery and fraud, and that basically, they are going to prove that these coaches weren't being bribed by Christian Dawkins. It's that they were working with Christian Dawkins to land recruits. Mm. And so this is sort of, we had somebody tell our Bruce Pascoe here in Sunday's paper that this is kind of the trial before the trial. And what the judge rules on Friday will not only have a very large impact on Arizona and all this, but it'll have a large impact, I think, on the outcome of the case. It will be... And you can tell this in trials across the board. What the judge rules before the trial begins and before jury selection often will give you an insight as to sort of how lenient he's going to be on the side of either the prosecution or on the defense. So if he rules that these coaches should testify, then maybe you have somebody who's leaning a little bit the defense's way, who's going to be a little bit more lenient toward the defense. If he rules that the coaches are just going to be basically a sideshow and that they shouldn't testify, then you'll see he's going to be pretty much stick to the basics here during the trial.
Ryan, I want you to elaborate on this a little bit. And you know, our Arizona Daily Star basketball writer, Bruce Pascoe, did a fantastic piece, further asked questions. It's pretty much a complete guide for any questions or concerns that you have about this trial. I mean, it goes in depth. But I want to go back to the point that you made about the argument that the defense is trying to make, that Christian Dawkins wasn't bribing these coaches to operate with him. Rather, it was a part of this whole operation that they had together. How does that relate to Arizona's Sean Miller?
Well, to sort of explain some of the legal ramifications, it's weird because it's kind of counterintuitive, right? It's going to sound funny. But basically, the prosecution's argument in the last federal trial, which was in October, was that Christian Dawkins and these coaches were defrauding the university by basically paying high school kids to pose as amateurs. Okay. And that in doing that, they were defrauding the universities who they worked for. Because those universities collected federal aid money, it was a federal crime. You follow? Basically, that's more of the same here in the second trial. where the prosecution is saying, you know, no, they were working to defraud the universities involved. And the defense's point is, no, this is the way college basketball is. And that in order to land some of these elite players, you work with the coaches to get these kids on your campus, right? Whether that means paying them or offering them impermissible benefits. But that is basically the defense's argument is, this is the nature of the beast in college basketball. Everybody's doing it. And in fact, we worked with coaches. And, you know, back to the initial often criticized ESPN story about Sean Miller from last February, there purports to be a transcript of a wiretap in which Sean Miller, according to ESPN, talked about paying a player. And that is why Sean Miller and then Will Wade have both been notable here and why both of them have reportedly been subpoenaed. Will Wade, remember, it was all over ESPN about a month ago, which is why Will Wade didn't coach LSU in the basketball tournament. That basically Will Wade was talking about a quote-unquote strong-ass offer that he had made to an incoming kid and that he had paid him what, you know, I think he said a draft pick would have made. So that's why both of these coaches are likely to be, or have been subpoenaed, have reportedly been subpoenaed, and why both of them are at the center of this case is there purports to be wiretap information on both of them that they would have to basically account for and explain.
You think that's a bad look for LSU and Will Wade because they reinstated Will Wade and like you said, a quote unquote strong ass offer. If I'm the athletic director or even the university president, I'm going to Will Wade and saying, can you recall any, like, what a strong ass offer meant? What did you seriously mean by that?
Right.
Because I saw LSU reinstating Will Wade and I was kind of surprised.
They gave him a strong ass scholarship offer. That's what they did. a chance to get a strong ass diploma from Louisiana State University.
What is a strong-ass offer?
We're getting glared out here. I'm afraid we need parental warning on this episode of the Wildcast. That's the question, right? I think we look at it this way, right? Step back for a minute. Both Will Wade and Sean Miller have the same attorney, Stephen Thompson. And what Stephen Thompson, based on Sean Miller's time away, right? This falls a lot into the kind of the Sean Miller playbook from a year ago. Sean Miller spent 5 days away from the program, met with his bosses, came back with the support of his bosses, pending any further information that comes out. LSU, same deal. He stayed away for about a month, would not talk to them. Then they came to the table. They said, basically, he is our coach unless information comes out that leads us to fire him, right? So that's kind of where we are here. I think a lot of it comes down to, with both Arizona and LSU, what is provable and what is out there and what is firing for cause or firing not for cause. If you were LSU and if you basically said to Will Wade, no, you're staying away from our program forever now, I think you'd have to pay him. And knowing what we know now, I think that the hope of all of these universities, I know the hope of me, is that in this federal trial that starts here on Monday, is we get some answers one way or another so we can get on with it, right? To me, you know, a definition of a living hell would be another 2 years or 18 months sort of dealing with the sort of allegations and unproven things that have taken over this entire investigation into college basketball. Hopefully we'll get some answers one way or another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, maybe Sean Miller wants answers too. You know, I'm sure that he doesn't like living in sort of this world with rumors and innuendo, and he can't comment about things and won't comment about other things. You know, if this trial goes on and not a lot comes out against Sean Miller, I think Sean Miller can get on with his life. Arizona can get on with getting that recruiting class here. If the opposite happens, if something comes up in that trial that, you know, gets Sean Miller in some sort of trouble, he'll address it with the U of A and with his bosses.
But this trial before the trial starts that you just said, does this determine whether or not Sean Miller is taking the stand?
Yes. That will be, the coach is subpoenaed. A judge will rule on Friday early in the day, Tucson time, whether these coaches must testify or don't have to testify. And so we'll have a pretty good idea Friday morning what's going on. Complicating matters a little bit, too, is, you know, Friday is kind of a dual religious holiday. I believe it's Passover in the Jewish tradition, and it's Good Friday. So for just about everybody involved in that trial, I think the plan is to get in and get out as quickly as possible on Friday, which means that we may have news on this, you know, before most people are waking up here in Tucson on Friday morning.
So this timeline for this upcoming week could be about five days?
Yeah, our understanding is that the judge will rule on that pretrial motion Friday morning. And so we will know Friday whether or not these coaches are expected to testify. I think that from a length of trial standpoint, jury selection begins Monday in this trial. I think that it'll last about 3 weeks, which was about the length of the last trial. Certainly, you know, the way we covered the last trial, too, we had Adam Zagoria, who was a freelance reporter who we use a lot out there. And it seemed like almost every day something new and salacious came out, whether it was about Kansas or Louisville or even Arizona. So, you know, I would anticipate some fireworks, whether or not these coaches testify, starting on Monday.
Things are kind of quiet right now in the sports world.
Too quiet. No offense to the sport of soccer, but we're on here. We're here at the Frog and Firkin, and there's a lot of soccer on TV.
I mean, because nationally, there's soccer on TV.
Internationally,
you got NBA playoffs.
Right.
You got NHL playoffs. Mm-hmm. So nationally, there's a lot of things going on, but locally here in the city of Tucson, usually when there's a lot of drama going on, especially over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. it seems pretty mellow.
Than normal. Pretty mellow. My guess is that changes here later this week.
Well, Ryan, I want to switch gears over onto the football field because
yes,
Arizona finished up their spring football practice period, and they had their annual spring game last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Fans finally caught a glimpse of Khalil Tate, but very briefly,
mm-hmm.
and by very briefly, I mean like a play.
Right.
He had that home run pass
mm-hmm.
to Devon Cooper that resulted in a touchdown. That mm-hmm. was the end of Khalil Tate. But Ryan, from somebody in your position, mm-hmm. looking at the coverage of spring practice and looking at the personnel of the Wildcats and that mm-hmm. they have, what jumps out to you and what concerns you about Arizona heading into 19?
I read absolutely nothing into a spring game. I covered U of A football for almost a decade.
147 plays, though.
Yeah. Rich Rodriguez was there. Mike Stoops was there. The only things that ever came out of spring games were bad things, right? I mean, I was there 1 year when, oh my gosh, who was it? Adam Hall, you know, blew out his knee. I think I was there when Adam Hall hurt his shoulder the following year. Players get hurt in spring games, and that's why, especially with quarterbacks, the last thing you want to do is have them going good on good, full contact, right, in a spring game. I'm not sure Khalil Tate could have done anything good or bad in Saturday's spring game to change his spot as their number one quarterback. Maybe that changes in fall camp. But even if it did, I mean, not to look at it sort of from a conspiratorial standpoint here, let's say Khalil Tate was running with the twos throughout all of spring, right? Why would they come out and, I don't know, there's no reason to have Khalil Tate play,
sure,
one way or another. And if they've made a decision on who their starting quarterback is, there's no reason to show people in spring. I think you look at depth. The difference between mediocre teams and good teams is depth. Everybody in the Pac-12 has, you know, 8 or 9 really good position players, a handful of pretty good defenders. But when guys start falling by the wayside, when guys get hurt, when guys transfer, you know, that's when you know, good teams like USC and Washington have the depth to withstand that stuff. Middling teams like Arizona can't. And we've seen that the last couple of years. Is when players get hurt, injuries really affect them. So I think the number one thing I would be looking at heading into this offseason is where's the depth situation right now, especially on both lines, because that's always so important. And again, how can Arizona continue to bring in, you know, waves and waves of talent so that depth is less of an issue next year than it is now?
Sure. You know, I have to wait until the season gets in full form before I can finally say that, oh, my question was answered. But it's kind of been answered already. One of my concerns heading into the offseason was how can Noel Mazzone and Khalil Tate
coexist?
Kind of get on the same page,
right,
see eye to eye, because it seemed like the offense just didn't flow well together. I mean, when you look back at what Khalil Tate did in that breakout season, mm-hmm. of that crazy month that he had. But Khalil Tate, when he came into this season, I think what he wanted to do was he wanted to show everybody, hey, I can pass too.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be an NFL prospect, I got to show off the arm.
Mm-hmm.
And Noel Mazzone said that in spring. They wanted to get Khalil Tate established in the pocket, mm-hmm. so he can polish his game up. And then he got hurt, and Khalil Tate wasn't the same.
Right. Last fall.
Last fall. Second game of the season against Houston.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't the same. Then going into the offseason, I said, well, you know, Khalil Tate was hurt. He was on the same page with Noel Mazzone. Khalil Tate has made it clear that he has focused on getting on the same page with Noel Mazzone and establishing that relationship. He told Michael Lev after the spring game when Michael Lev asked questions, so what's next for you? Khalil Tate said, you know, I'm going to go to LA, do the camps, do all the quarterback stuff, do that. But I'm going to make sure that I am always calling Coach Mazzoni, and I think that's very important because Khalil Tate's got one more year here in Tucson.
Saying all the right things, and I think that that's important. You know, we looked last year. I think that if you asked everybody associated with the football program if they could have done the Khalil Tate thing differently, would they? I think they would have said yes, right? I think most people would agree that, you know, it sounds bad because it's revisionist history, but, you know, maybe if Brandon Dawkins doesn't transfer, maybe when Khalil Tate gets hurt at Houston, Brandon Dawkins comes in, and then Khalil Tate's good and fully healthy for the start of the Pac-12 season. You know, maybe if Khalil Tate plays it a little bit differently early in the Pac-12 season, maybe Arizona's not chasing it at the end of the Pac-12 season, right? Tate's numbers were really good. I think just imagine how good he can be if he's A, healthy, and B, on the same page with his offensive coordinator and his head coach. If everything kind of hits at the same time next year, I mean, we could see that Khalil Tate Heisman Trophy talk again. As kind of ridiculous as it seems right now,
man.
You know, the Pac-12, I mean, there's no superstar quarterback in the Pac-12. Justin Herbert's pretty good. But Khalil Tate, I mean, I think he could be the best.
Herbert's pretty good.
I think he could be the best quarterback in the league next year if he figures it all out. Because certainly physically there's nothing he can't do.
Man, you're better than Justin Herbert. That might be the number one pick in next year's draft.
Might be. He's prototypical. But just because you're prototypical doesn't mean you're the best right now. Right?
Absolutely.
Justin Herbert, if I'm drafting a guy to play in the NFL, Justin Herbert ticks all the boxes. Absolutely. That doesn't mean necessarily that he's the best quarterback in the league today. In fact, I would say going off just kind of history, college resume right now, I think Khalil Tate's had a better college career than Justin Herbert. He's just not 6'6", 225 like Justin Herbert is. Mm-hmm.
When you were covering Mike Stoops, when you were the football beat writer,
yeah.
what made Mike Stoops' defense what it was?
I think it was sort of an institutional commitment to defense. You look at sort of the backgrounds that Arizona's coaches since Mike Stoops have had, and it's all been offense, right? Kevin Sumlin was a college linebacker who's coached basically offense most of his career as a college coach. So part of it was that your head coach, and then, you know, I think their most influential assistant when he was here was Mark Stoops, who was Mike Stoops' brother. They came from a similar background. They built teams on defense. They were sort of solely and wholeheartedly dedicated to improving on defense every day. And that's why you saw, I think, that and Mike Stoops' scheme, which was very NFL-friendly. They ran basically your standard 4-3 set. That's why you saw them developing these pro prospects, even in years in which they weren't very good. You know, Brooks Reed, Ricky Elmore, you know, on down, Antoine Kaysen was spectacular. Even somebody like a Michael Johnson, you may have been 6 years old when Michael Johnson was here, but even somebody like a Michael Johnson went on, played in the NFL, got a Super Bowl ring. They developed prototypical players because they played a prototypical system, and they had a coach and a culture that was dedicated to defense.
Yes.
Now, they had major problems offensively, right? Major problems offensively. I mean, there were sort of the Chris Huebner years, right? That quarterback and you know, Adam Austin and guys like that. You know, it just all depends on, and it all comes down to what you want to dedicate your time and energy to. I think that Mike Stoops dedicated all of his time and all of his energy to getting better on defense. I think the coaches since then have dedicated most of their time and most of their energy to scoring more points than the other guy. Mm-hmm. Is there a right way to do it? No. The key, I think everybody wants balance. But, you know, at least in the case of Stoops started with defense and then, you know, not the other way around.
And the reason why I bring up that part is because I kind of see Arizona starting to trend in that right direction in one specific area, the secondary.
Yeah.
Now, they're thin at the cornerback spot. But I think once they get more recruits in, because they just picked up KJ Crump, who was from Culver City, California, he was visiting Arizona for the spring game. He committed right before, and you know, I started looking at his film, and he's very athletic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's only 5'11", but he's very athletic, and he could be. Antoine Kaysen's a bold comparison,
yeah,
but he could be the guy that's
a bigger DB.
A cornerback and a return player.
Mm-hmm.
That's how quick he is. The safety group for Arizona is very intriguing because you have Scotty Young, Tristan Cooper, Xavier Bell, Christian Young. Like, you have a lot of very talented, and some of them are long and lengthy players.
Sure.
And you look back at those Mike Stoops secondaries, Antoine Kaysen, Cam Nelson, Robert Golden, right? Devin Ross. I mean, am I missing anybody?
I haven't heard the name Cam Nelson in 9 years. No, you're right. They were all very good players, guys who stepped up into sort of captain, all Pac-12 performer kinds of roles. Yeah, no, they were big. Somebody like Devin Ross wasn't big, but he might have been the most athletic guy on the team.
Sure.
You're right, and I think that with Arizona, I think the one thing that was really lost in kind of the Rich Rodriguez era was, you know, they played that 3-3-5 odd stack defense, which is just not conducive to getting NFL caliber players to your place, right? You know, it's kind of a fun, it's a small guy, fast guy defense, which may work really well on Saturdays, but it doesn't produce guys who are going to contribute on Sundays. I think what we've seen with Marcel Yates and with Kevin Sumlin is going back to a system that's a little bit more prototypical. It's sure. a little bit more like what you see on Sundays. And when you play that scheme and there's a chance to offer playing time to guys, you're going to start recruiting better defenders. I think we're seeing that really with this incoming recruiting class, guys who have already enrolled. I think they'll be better on defense next year. Will they be improved enough on
interior
defense?
Though
yeah, that's the problem. That's where your big holes are.
And does Marcel Yates get a pass for that? Because year four, right? Marcel Yates?
He's been here. No, of course he doesn't get a pass. I think, though, that you know you need to talk about what is important to you in recruiting. You know, Arizona has Iona Uigalele. Mm-hmm. I tried. I'm sorry. And he's a guy who you know has experience at the junior college level, has experience recruiting Polynesian players. You know, where are those guys? More of those guys. Get more of those guys. You have Demetrius Martin. He's an LA guy. You know, have these coaches lean on their areas of expertise and try to bring in some of those players. You're right. On the inside next year, they're going to be thin. But you know what? We're seeing real improvement, I think, in not only in linebacker, but in the secondary. I think that there's a chance that this team could be better on defense.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to put on my 30 for 30 voice on sure. right now. What if I told you Jalen Harris ended up becoming Arizona's best defenseman next year?
Is there anybody who looks better in a uniform than Jalen Harris?
No.
I'm asking.
I mean, I know Colin Schooler is coming back, and he's expected to have an all Pac-12 caliber season, but Jalen Harris, though.
And Jalen Harris, it's funny. You look at him with that body and that frame and those genes that he has. I mean, his father, Sean Harris, played on the Desert Swarm teams and for the Bears. His mom played basketball at the U of A.
Yeah.
He is a guy, his younger brother, is one of America's top football recruits, isn't he?
Yep. 6'8", 6'7".
Right.
He's a big boy.
Right. Harris is a guy who I think if you can get a little bit more, I mean, he needs to put on what? 40 pounds?
Yes.
50 pounds?
Yeah.
But if he can put that on in a smart way as he grows, he'll continue to be, I mean, just a physical specimen. I'm probably dating myself a little bit here, Justin, but he reminds me a lot of DeAndre Reed. You remember DeAndre?
Oh, yeah.
DeAndre Reed was a guy, Inland Empire guy. He played for those Mike Stoops teams. Again, looks spectacular in a uniform, 6'4", 6'5". You know, the physical freak.
And he would have been starting on any Pac-12 team, but he had Brooks Reed and Ricky Elmore
in front of him.
Yeah. Right.
And just kind of things never came together for him. I mean, he's really strong, but I mean, based kind of only on his pro day stuff and some limited college action, I mean, he got drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. He played in the NFL 3 or 4 years. I think Jalen Harris can project to be even better than that, but it's a similar body type where, you know, he may be a guy who, you know, just starts to grow into his body by the time he leaves college or by the time he's a senior in college. And then maybe he's somebody who becomes just an impactful pro. Certainly has the body type and the lineage to be a very good, very good football player.
His brother, since you mentioned him, is it Josh Harris? I'm blanking on the name. Someone with a J. But he's also a basketball player.
Yes.
He's got offers from Texas Tech. Is there a possibility that he could play basketball here at the University of Arizona?
There's always a possibility.
Along with playing football.
There's always a possibility. It's been done before. You know, when I was a freshman in college, this was a long time ago, Ortiz Jenkins and Kelvin Ifon did both.
Oh, that's right.
They did both. Peter Hansen, I don't know if you remember him. He's now the linebackers coach at Stanford. He did both. Sure, it's happened before. I mean, it's a question of, you know, I mean, would he be the last guy coming off the bench? Probably. But if that's something you got to do to get him to consider Arizona, wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Sumlin and Sean Miller had a conversation.
Mm.
Sure.
any other thoughts on spring football? Any concerns? Questions?
What I learned over the years is, spring football is it's hard to compare spring football to anything. I mean, is it like summer league basketball in the NBA? I mean, I don't know. I think Arizona got out of spring football without many injuries, which is good. I think that we've seen at least anecdotal evidence that Khalil Tate and Noel Mazzoni are playing well together, playing nice. Those two things are the two biggest things. And I think that since both of those things happened, I'd say you call spring football a success.
Absolutely. All right, Ryan. So we have about 5 minutes left here in the podcast. We're going to talk about your boy here.
Luke Walton.
The former L.A. Lakers head coach and Arizona Wildcat was officially announced as the Sacramento Kings head coach. Mm-hmm. He had an introductory press conference on Monday. Mm-hmm. What did you think about your boy? San Diego native right there. What do you think about your boy getting a new gig with the Sacramento Kings? I love it personally because all the young players on the roster, I think Luke Walton's going to develop.
I think this may be the first time in the history of recorded time that somebody has gone from the Lakers to the Sacramento Kings, and it's been an improvement.
Yeah.
This may be the first guy who's ever been truly happy to join the Sacramento Kings. If you look at roster construction, you look at the overall inexperience but talent on this team, this fits what Luke Walton was supposed to be doing with the Lakers all along. Right. They brought Luke Walton in to develop the young guys. Right. The Lakers team that he took over a couple of years ago had Russell, D'Angelo Russell. They drafted the guy from Duke. The big tall guy who shoots. Justin, you're a Laker fan.
Big tall guy.
Brandon Ingram. Ingram, thank you. But, Luke Walton was brought in basically to try to develop the young players. And then LeBron James goes, we'll all play for you now, and blows up the plan. Right. In Sacramento, he's going to be given an opportunity to develop a really young, talented core of players. I think with very limited meddling. I mean, Vlade Divac meddles, but not in the way that LeBron's people meddled or Magic Johnson meddled or Rob Pelinka meddled. Right. He's going to get an opportunity to basically play to his strengths out of the spotlight for a little bit. I would not be at all surprised to see next year's surprise team or the year after that surprise team be the Sacramento Kings. They have young players. They have, I think, a coach who understands how to develop them. This is going to be really, really good. Not to mix my sports metaphors here, but I do it all the time. I think this would be like asking, Kevin Cash, who's the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, right? It'd be like being like, keep doing you. Hold on, wait, hear me out. Keep doing you, right? And then, I don't know who Giancarlo Stanton comes in and goes, I want to play for the Devil Rays. Right. It changes your plans. Bryce Harper goes, I've always dreamed of playing for the Devil Rays. Well, you can't continue with the player development track when you've just added the most visible player in your sport and the most powerful player in your sport. Mm-hmm. I think Luke Walton is better off without LeBron James.
Yes.
I think Luke Walton is better off without the Lakers. I think for him, this could end up being, and it sounds weird, but the biggest move of his life and maybe the best move of his life.
Yes.
Go to Sacramento. Hang out, lay low, develop these players, and make your playoff run then. And then guess what? Steve Kerr at some point is going to decide that the grind of an NBA coaching career is not for him, right? He's had back issues. He has more work-life balance than me or you or anybody else we know. Steve Kerr at some point in the next 7 years will put his hands in the air and go, okay, I've won 5 rings. I'm done. And guess what? If Luke Walton and the Sacramento Kings are humming along at that point, guess who's going to be the next head coach of the Golden State Warriors? It'll be Luke Walton.
Luke Walton.
This positions him well, not only for now, but for whenever Steve Kerr decides to leave.
That's a good idea. And man, I didn't even think of that. So you're thinking Luke Walton's playing chess here.
Well, yeah. Luke Walton's smart boy.
That's good.
Smart guy. It's that University of San Diego high school education.
I'm happy for Luke Walton, though, because I thought he got a bad rap at the end of the season just because it doesn't help when LeBron misses 19 games out of the season with a groin injury because when he went down, they smacked the Golden State Warriors on Christmas Day, and they were the fourth seed in the West. Things were looking good for the Lakers. Then LeBron goes out, Lonzo Ball goes out, and then all of a sudden a little rumor happens that everybody in the entire Lakers roster is going to be traded for Anthony Davis. And the Lakers felt kind of betrayed, and all their confidence was just shot. And so they really didn't have any motivation to play. And I think that Luke Walton was trying as hard as he could to keep the ship going. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the guys just didn't even want to be there. And I thought that Luke had consequences for something that he wasn't responsible for.
You talk about playing chess. Magic Johnson was playing checkers, right? He was, I think, completely outsmarted by Del Demps. It was Del Demps then, right before he got fired.
Yep.
He got completely outsmarted by Del Demps during this. I think that the Pelicans were so furious with the Lakers for what they thought was tampering was that they were going to string the Lakers along and then leak to every media outlet who wanted to know exactly who Magic Johnson was floating out there in trade rumors. And it broke the Lakers apart. And when we talk about why did Magic Johnson hold that weird press conference a week ago, it's because the Lakers fell apart on his watch. And, Luke Walton is a casualty and all that. But you know what? I still think he's in a better situation. This is as much about getting away from LeBron and LeBron's influences. LeBron could wake up tomorrow and decide that he wants Justin Spears as the Lakers' new head coach, and he'd get him, right? If you're a head coach, you can look at the last 10 years of LeBron James and how many head coaches he's blown through and realize that you probably just don't want to be dealing with that whole scene.
The only one that was not handpicked that actually worked was Eric Spoelstra.
And that was because Pat Riley was there.
Yeah.
Right? It's because Pat Riley sat LeBron down and said, nope, this is our guy, and you're going to respect him. If you're Luke Walton, I think you're better off in Sacramento. And again, I think this positions him well for maybe taking over the Golden State Warriors eventually, because Steve Kerr, you know and I know, I think doesn't need basketball to define his life. And I think once he gets a certain number of rings or once his back starts acting up again, I think that he'll go do TV or something. And Luke Walton, if he plays it right, can be positioned to take over there.
That'd be awesome. Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. You can download the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play. For Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.